Phil Hendry Show is brought to you by your participating local Nissan dealers.
1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show.
Well, the United States is, the American people are talking about one thing today and one thing only, and that is Mel Gibson's film, The Passion of the Christ. Bobby Dooley, Steve Dooley, they are both educators from the Parent Teacher Organization of Western Estates, have joined us because I want to talk about this from an educator's standpoint. I understand, Bobby, that you and your husband both went and saw the film.
That is correct, Phil. We saw the film at the Montclair, which had it on three screens last Wednesday. And we were, as far as I know, we were the first people in our community and here in the West Valley to see the film.
What did you think of it?
Well, I want to say, first of all, Phil, that one of my passions personally is film. I enjoy it. I like to walk a little bit on the wild side. I love art house films. I love the small independents. So we went and we saw The Passion of the Jesus Christ. And
well, how did you feel about the film?
We were disappointed.
Why?
Phil, I'm an Italian-American. My maiden name is Pereca. My great-grandfather came to this country at the turn of the century through Ellis Island in New York. I think all of us Italians are getting a little tired of seeing the Italian people and their forebears depicted as violent animals. We saw this a phenomenon with The Sopranos. If you're familiar with that program, we saw this with the, you know, the different Italian movies.
Godfather.
With The Godfather.
Well, you're talking about The Passion of the Christ as an anti-Italian movie because of the Roman soldiers?
The Roman soldiers are depicted, yes, in an extremely violent way. I do a lot of art house films. I've seen a lot of unusual movies, but I have never seen Italian Americans depicted the way they were in this film by Mel Gibson. They flay the flesh off of the body of Jesus. They laugh as they break his bones. They laugh as they pull muscle from skeleton. Once again, Italians as violent, uncontrollable animals.
But Ms. Dooley, you're talking about this movie depicting Italians in a negative way. This film has been described as anti-Semitic more than anything else, and it's a depiction of Jewish people in a negative way.
Well, we anticipated.
Yeah, Phil, Steve was saying, we anticipated that comment from you and a lot of people. A lot of people are focusing on this idea that the Jews are treated badly in this movie or badly depicted.
What about that? I mean, that seems to be that. I haven't heard anyone say that the film is anti-Italian.
Well, you won't, because it's acceptable to show Italians as violent, butchering animals walking on all fours. I think the this is a predictable thing to take that the Jews this, the Jews that. We're always hearing about that. But this constant representation of the Italian people as being violent, relishing sadistic behavior, we are now saying it has to stop. Italian Americans who go and see The Passion of Jesus, I think, are going to be perceived as self-hating, because this was a shock for me. You talk about the Jews.
We expected that.
We expected the Jews to be perceived as bad. We expected that because, you know.
Well, why? Why would you expect the Jews to be perceived? Was that okay with you?
Well, that's what I've been told, that they're the ones that killed Christ. So you have to understand.
Ms. Dooley, all I'm saying is,
no, you have to understand that that's going to be the perception.
So it's all right for the Jewish people to be perceived as evil, not just Roman or as you say, Italian people?
You know what? I'm not even going to dignify that with a response.
I'm calling for a
statement. I think it's beneath it.
Well, that's what it sounds like to me. It sounds like you're saying it's all right for the Jews to be depicted negatively, but not so what you say are Italians.
Look, what we're asking for and what the Italian American is asking for is that this depiction.
Well, wait a minute. What about the overall message in this movie that Jesus Christ died for the sins of humanity, not just Jewish people or Italians?
Yeah, but that message gets lost, you see.
It gets lost, Mr. Henry.
It gets lost in the greater picture that the Italian people are being spit on. And I'll tell you why. I got so angry at how the Italian Americans were depicted, I stopped caring, and this is very important, I stopped caring about what was happening to Jesus. That's what the movie does.
Wait a minute, Ms. Dooley. That...
No, that's what the movie does. You get so disgusted with the way the Italian soldiers are you know, beating on the Jesus, that you suddenly you forget about what's happening to the Jesus, okay, and you start worrying about what the Italians are doing. And I think that's the opposite of what Mel Gibson wanted.
All right, Bobby and Steve Dooley are with me, the president and secretary of the Western Estates parent-teacher organization. We're talking about The Passion of the Christ, the Mel Gibson film that has broken box office records for this time of the year. The movie is doing numbers reminiscent of Star Wars. It's doing numbers that challenge Lord of the Rings. It is a film that is in Latin and Aramaic and is probably the most violent film ever made. And you guys are essentially, and I'm going to give our phone number out, 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. For people who are curious about this film, who have seen it perhaps, you're saying...
So, if I could interrupt you.
Go ahead.
Mel Gibson and his little movie have brought back 100 years of prejudicism, of the prejudicism against Italian-Americans. And it hurts so very deeply. And what we're trying to say is...
You don't care what happens to Jesus on account
of... Do it. What the point I'm trying to make, Phil, and then I think Steve is trying to make, is you stop wanting to be a Christian. And I think that's very dangerous.
Are you a Christian, Ms. Dooley?
I have never considered myself to be religious, but I am open to the idea that being a Christian is good. But, and this is so very, very deeply important, when you see the Jesus movie, when you see the Passion of Jesus, you don't want to be Christian. You literally get so disgusted with the way Italians are shown.
All right. The film is violent. The film shows incredible suffering, the suffering of this man, Jesus of Nazareth. It shows the suffering of a mother, Mary, watching her son die in a horrible way. How could you not have compassion for that?
No, Phil, it's a good question.
We're not saying we don't have compassion, but that Mel Gibson didn't make us have it.
What happens is, as a proud Italian, the way they are spitting on the Italian people makes me almost, and this is very difficult for me to say because I'm a mother as well, Phil, it makes me almost glad that the Italian soldiers are doing that to Jesus, because it's like revenge. In other words, if you want to make us look like animals, okay, guess what? We're going to take Jesus and hammer him up on the wall. And
So in other words, this film misses the mark.
It absolutely misses the mark. It's supposed to make you want to become a Jesus person, a Christian, but in point of fact, Steve and I started almost laughing at how ridiculous they were making the Italians look, and there was a woman next to me crying, and that was through the crucifixion scene, and I listened to this woman. I said, "Oh my God, are you for real?" Because I want to say to her, look at what they're doing to the Italian. So Mel Gibson is typically lazy in his filmmaking, as he was in The Patriot, as he was in the Braveheart. He just blamed everything again on the Italians. He did no research. He did.
Well, I haven't seen the movie yet. I'm planning on seeing it tomorrow morning. I was out of the country.
Where were you?
Marie and I went to Mexico last week. But I will say that everything that I've read is that the film is taken from the Gospels.
Well, if it's taken from the Gospels, I don't see anything in the Word of God that says that you can literally hawk up, and excuse me for using the language of my sons, but hawk up a big green one and shoot it out of both your nose and your mouth all over the Italian people.
So the film is anti-Italian.
The film is a prejudice against them, yeah.
And not anti-Semitic.
I don't know.
You're talking the wrong people about it.
I really don't know, Phil. I don't want to get into that.
What I've heard is that the movie is anti-Semitic, not anti-Italian.
Whatever you've heard, I don't know. I'm an Italian-American. Now, you can go and see The Passion of the Jesus, and you can take the crucifix that hangs on your wall and toss it into a garbage can in your bathroom. If that's what, you know, I don't know what you're trying. What's your point?
All right, look at Ms. Dooley. I want to take a break here. I'm going to give her a number out. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686.
The Jews killed Jesus, not the Italians.
So that is your point.
That is my point, yeah.
And you don't think Roman soldiers tortured him?
I think that they whipped him, yes. I don't think that they pulled the very muscle from his skeleton. I don't think they flayed the skin off of him. And it is horrible. They whipped him and they put a crown on him, which I think is bad enough. And then they took him to the hill where the Jews nailed him to a cross.
All right, 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. We're talking about The Passion of the Christ. This film is going to be talked about for months. In fact, I don't think there's been any real buzz around a movie since The Exorcist, like the buzz that's around this flick. The violence of the movie. Ms. Dooley and her husband, Steve, went and saw this film, and they say it is patently anti-Italian because it shows Roman soldiers flaying the skin off the body of Jesus. It shows Roman soldiers laughing as they are literally pulling the tendons from his arms and things that are just horrifically graphic in the movie. However, when I addressed the idea that it was anti-Semitic or that it made the Jews look bad, she professes not to know what it is I'm talking about. 1-800-449-8686. Now, I don't think that, Janice, you've got some of the material that she sent you. But she said that she walked in there perhaps wanting to be a Christian, and she walked out not wanting to have anything to do with Christianity. All right, 1-800-449-8686. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. God's favorite radio show.
The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Talking about The Passion of the Christ, Mel Gibson's film, which was released last week, Bobby Dooley and Steve Dooley, both of them with the parent-teacher organization Western Estates. We've got some phone calls I want to go to, Ms. Dooley. I first want to ask you, you are at a fundraiser tonight?
We are, Phil. We are fundraising for the anti-Italian, anti-defamation coalition. We want to send a very clear message to Hollywood and to Mr. Gibson that he can't continue to use the Italian people as the emblems, if you will, of violent, reprehensible, sadomasochistic behavior. And you mentioned the Jewish, the Jew persons in the movie. I don't know. They're not the ones flaying the skin off of the Jesus. It's the Italians. And I wrote a letter that I want to...
All right, let's get into all of that, but let me go to a phone call first, all right?
Yeah.
1-800-449-8686. Robin, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Bobby Dooley.
Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so, I just wanted to basically bring one point to clear with regards to how you're feeling. I'm an African-American woman, and I'm trying to sit here and theorize how if I would put myself into your shoes, if Jesus was crucified by black people or by Africans at that time, if I would feel the same way. And I absolutely disagree with you. I'm not a religious person. I am a very spiritual person, and that movie deeply, deeply moved me. I did not see any correlation as to
Robin, you saw the film, huh?
I did see the film, yeah. Mm-hmm. I saw it when it first came out Wednesday.
Oh, my God. So you didn't see clearly Italian men. You know, I wanted to say, I said to my husband, why don't they just put, Tony Soprano and have them in helmets and laughing. See, that's how I felt.
The problem that I have with that is that the movie... The movie to me was depicted the way that is in the Bible. I was raised Methodist. I've gone to church. I don't practice any religion currently, but I know the Bible. And there are clearly several depictions are very, the actuality of the movie.
A lot of black people did kill Jesus because the Jews back then were black. You see? So if that's the part you're talking about, Mr. Henry?
The what?
You say the Jews killed him?
The thing is, though, that's...
I didn't say that.
Well, they did, and they were black Jews.
Okay,
and that's something that Louis Farrakhan... I'd love to hear what he has to say about that.
The problem mm-hmm. is to me, and I think that's one of the reasons why America is not ready for this movie,
mm-hmm.
is because you cannot break down
mm-hmm.
to make it as small as
mm-hmm.
a race
yeah.
issue.
You know,
it isn't a race issue. I mean, it's something so much more powerful.
Well,
than
as an Italian American, I know the prejudice you've been through because I'm Italian, you know. So I know what you've been through as a black woman.
Well, you can't actually
mm-hmm.
say that. I
mm-hmm.
would never say that I've been in your shoes, and you can absolutely never say that you've walked through my shoes to know
mm-hmm.
the type of prejudice that I've been through.
Well,
but I can tell you again, like I said, it's not.
Have you ever been called greaseball or guinea? I have.
Like I said,
I'm
not admitting to
mm-hmm.
have ever.
All right. Robin, thank you very much. Very nice point of view there. 1-800-449-8686.
What was nice about it? I mean,
God, it sounds like you're prejudiced, Mr. Henry.
Well, she said that she saw it and she was very moved by it. She's a spiritual person. You know, I liked the perspective.
But again, she's black. If you want to blame someone for the death of Jesus, let's talk about the Jews during the Aramaic period. They were black. Okay. And we have to face that.
All right, let me go here. 1-800-449-8686. Jenny, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi.
Hi, Jenny.
Hi, this is Jenny calling.
Yes.
I just had to call
mm-hmm.
because this is my first time tuning into the program.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say
Thank
that
you.
I agree with the previous caller, the
mm-hmm.
woman that just hung up the telephone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm finding the current woman who's on the line
mm-hmm.
incredibly offensive and ignorant in how she's representing herself. I think it's incredibly offensive for her to be saying that the movie is
mm-hmm.
so offensive towards Italian Americans.
Are you
I am
Italian?
Also, yes, I am.
Okay, then you know what I'm saying.
I absolutely do not agree with you at all. This movie was made according to the gospel,
mm-hmm.
and if it is to follow the premise of the gospel, the guards were Roman. I'm not sure what you're expecting. Would you like those guards to be portrayed by Irish or Spanish?
No.
This is a story that's following the gospel.
Yes, however. It says, yes, they whipped Jesus. Are you there?
Yes.
I'm sorry, it sounded like you got disconnected.
No.
It says that they whipped Jesus. Okay, great. They beat him, and then they put a coat on him, and they sent him up the mountain. They didn't rip his eyeballs from his sockets. My God. And they didn't...
Well, it said he was scourged. He was scourged at the pillar.
Yes, exactly.
It says nothing about ripping his tendons out of his arms.
So would you be more
shoving,
comfortable with the movie if perhaps his eyeballs were not ripped out? Would you think that would portray the Italians as better?
They overdid it. And you know why they overdid it, Jenny? Because they had some Italian actors, or as my husband likes to say, they hired the local WOPs and put them in the role that they're familiar in, and that is
so
let's hang a man from a meat hook.
Derogatory terms
mm-hmm.
such as WOP.
Yes.
But when anybody else goes who's not Italian, then it's offensive.
Jenny, those Romans flayed the skin off of the Jesus. I already saw The Godfather. Do I need to see it again?
That's my point. As an Italian American, I did not find it offensive in the least. I thought the movie
mm-hmm.
was very well done.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that it did represent the gospel clearly, and those guards could have been portrayed by Italians.
Well, you were
Secondly,
there.
Secondly, so. I do not, if neither were you.
Well.
Finally, I do not care at all for how you are leading this whole conversation in that let's take the ship back and really put it on the Jews.
No.
I think, if anything, your
how
phone call
How dare you?
Very
I said nothing
anti-
about the Jews.
You
I
have
said,
yes,
said
you
that
did.
Multiple
you
times.
You said that the Jews were
multiple
black.
Multiple times you have said, let's get that
I doubt if you're Italian.
Jews.
I doubt if you're Italian. You sound
well, you know what?
I'm like a self-loathing
guinea. I find you to be incredibly offensive,
well, I find you to be
incredibly
very, very
ignorant,
mm-hmm.
and I see
mm-hmm.
your phone call is very mm-hmm. anti-Semitic.
All right. Thank you, Jenny, for your call.
Oh, she gets the last word.
Well, I got to take a break. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. The Passion of Christ.
The Phil Hendry Show is back.
With Bobby and Steve Dooley, what was your comment? We're talking about the Passion of the Christ, the Mel Gibson film. You were saying that they should have had Mary Magdalene doing what?
Well, the way they treat Italians in this movie, the Italian soldiers who are from Rome. And the last time I checked, and I could be wrong, Steve, could you get out the atlas?
Johnny.
Where's the city of Rome?
In Italy.
Thank you. Oh, my God, people are stupid. So the Romans come from Italy. That's number one. Number two, it was a joke that I made, and I guess some people took it in bad taste. I said, why don't they have Mary, the mother of Jesus, at the foot of the cross singing, oh, sola mio, or when the moon hits the sky like a big pizza pie, that's amore, because that's what they're doing to the Italian peoples.
All right, an anti-Italian film. I haven't heard it described that way. That's Ms. Dooley, you are Italian-American. That's what you think of this film, The Passion of Christ. 1-800-449-8686. Charlene, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Bobby and Steve Dooley.
Yeah, I just want to make comment to what this woman is saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I am second generation Italian here in this country. Now, first of all, you got to get your history right.
Are you from Italy?
Your homework.
Are you from Italy, or did you say you're from Italy?
Yeah, I'm from Italy. Romans, yes.
Well, you don't sound like you're from Italy. You sound like an American, so I don't
understand. I said I'm second generation Italian. Romans were part of that peninsula, but the Italians are descended from European, English, French. You know, so I cannot see how you can reach back and say that that they're cutting up Italians here. This is it's incredible. You are
far-reaching. No. The reason why let me help you because you're confused. Rome's in Italy. We know that.
Yeah?
Okay. So what are you trying to say?
Well,
Charlene's saying
say,
that
if,
all right, go ahead, Charlene.
2,000 years ago,
the hostess
can see the Romans
you.
Came from
Italy.
That peninsula. But the Italians, I mean, how can you reach back and say that Mel Gibson is bashing on the Italians? It has nothing to do with Italians.
Of course
it has to do with the four Gospels from the New Testament and about what happened to Christ in the last day of his life.
All right, can I say something? In the film, the soldiers say the words, mangiati quattro mucci arrostiti. That is Italian, and it's an Italian insult. It says, go and eat four roasted fly livers or something. I don't know what that means. Okay, doesn't that sound like Italian?
Well, it's Latin. It's Latin.
It also sounds American, and it sounds Greek. You know, do you have the history? Wait, now I just have a question to ask you.
No.
Do you have the history of that period of time?
Yes.
Do you know what language they spoke during that time?
They spoke a kind of Italian called Latin. And
well, it's not a kind of Italian. It was a language called Latin, and they spoke Aramaic in that region.
Oh, get you. So you read a movie review, Mr. Hendry, and all of a sudden you're familiar with...
No, I studied Latin in high school, and I know that the Romans...
Excuse me. I'm an educated woman here. I know what I'm talking about.
Well, then you know that Rome is in Italy. Oh, my God.
Unbelievable.
No, you're unbelievable. I cannot believe the ignorance that
even
you have
your name isn't Italian.
To this point. I cannot believe the ignorance. And you know something?
You know how I know you're not Italian? Your name, Charlene, is not an Italian name. The name's Maria, those kinds of names.
You want to
know
something,
ladies? Well, that's ridiculous.
You are so far out. I just cannot believe it. You know, I'm sorry.
Excuse me, but I saw the movie.
I'm really ashamed that in America we have people like you getting on a talk show and saying that we're bashing Italians, we're bashing blacks.
Oh, my God. How can you not stand up for people?
This was a movie to show the passion of Christ and what he suffered for our sins on this earth.
Why do you reject your Italian roots? Why do you not call yourself Charlena or Charlenata?
Because that was the Christian name my parents gave me.
Well, I'm not buying it.
Wait a minute.
Geez.
You know, Ms. Dooley...
She's a self-hating Italian.
Well, wait a second. You're not hearing what the lady is saying. She said that Romans and the inhabitants of the so-called Italian peninsula at that time were a different nationality, if you will, or ethnicity from the present-day Italian that you're talking about.
I think it's all an excuse to once again, and this is an Italian-American woman who loves to see Italians portrayed as mobsters who love to see Italians portrayed as loan sharks, as pimps, as hustlers. Well, no, not me. Not anymore. I'm Bobby Parecca. That's my name. And I stand it. And Charlena, if you don't mind me calling you that, your family would be ashamed.
I do mind you, because that's not my name.
Well, it should be. Charlenetta. Because you're
my parents chose
that's why they
name
named,
for me.
Well, they named you a trailer trash name. I'm sorry.
All right, now that it, you
okay.
should apologize for that.
You know. But you know something?
Well, I apologize for them, Ms.
They're speaking
Charlena.
From pure ignorance. They
right.
they don't have their history. They don't know what they're talking about.
Well, I
so,
just quoted
know,
Latin
point,
to you,
point,
and you
all
know.
I can do is pity them.
All right, but listen, Charlene, thank you.
It's Charlenata.
It's Charlene. Thank you.
Charlene McQueenie. You know what they ought to call her? It's just for how she hates her own people. How about just Charlena Guinea? You know, as in linguine, because she hates being Italian.
You know, this is all about Italians and nothing about how a man was brutalized and murdered by an entire, you know, race of people, by an entire locality of people. Everybody who lived down there was Jewish at the time, so if anybody got killed down there, I guess you could say Jewish people, but the guys that got killed were Jewish. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, my God, I'm not even talking about Jews. I'm talking about...
No, but I'm saying... You can't indict an entire race of people for the actions of a few.
That's what I'm saying, too. So why do Italians get beat over the head constantly with being Christ killers just because a few Romans got liquored up and nailed a guy up on a cross?
All right, 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. Thomas, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Bobby and Steve Dooley.
Yeah, this is Pastor Thomas Francis from Williamstown, Kentucky, and I just thought that this is ridiculous. This lady has claimed that the Jews have killed Jesus and that Mel
Black
Gibson
Jews.
Hates Italians.
Black Jews.
Oh, see, that is uncalled for. Now, let me tell you the truth of the matter is that God had to kill his own son, Jesus,
well,
for
I know
our
that.
Sin.
I know that.
Okay?
I know
and history,
that.
And history also shows
that
us that the
who
Romans...
enthusiastically went over to God and said,
okay,
hey, if you're going to kill him, can we do it?
Italian.
We're the
Roman
black
soldiers.
Jews.
Ma'am,
that's
excuse
what I'm saying.
Me, I'm sorry.
Would you let
excuse
the pastor
me,
say...
look,
ma'am, please
God
let me get a
might have killed him.
Let
but somebody had to raise their hand and say, I'll do it, I'll do it. I can assure you it wasn't the Italians. That's all I'm saying.
It was. You're right. It wasn't the Italians. It was Roman soldiers. Now, if you study your history, you'll find out Roman soldiers were soldiers from all different parts of the Roman Empire.
That's a good point.
They weren't just Italians.
Some were African. Some were from Gaul.
Yes.
Some were from Britannia.
Oh my God! What are you talking about?
They were from
what
everywhere.
What are you men talking about?
The Roman soldiers were from all peninsulas, all areas.
Yeah, they were from all parts of the Roman Empire.
Gaul. What is that?
That was present-day
that's
France.
That's a history lesson for you. That's a history lesson.
Thomas, I would suggest you stick to what you know, which is, you know, pounding your shoe on a pulpit or whatever you do.
Well, what I know is history, ma'am. Yeah, ma'am, what I know is history, and
you know,
I do not
you know
insult
the
others,
Bible.
But I know history. And
you
you're receiving a history lesson.
Well, no, Mel Gibson
it sounds
was
today
dumped
that
by an Italian woman.
Lesson.
Mel
that's
Gibson.
That's what it sounds like.
Well,
I can recommend several good world history books to you.
Mm-hmm.
But
let me tell you what
the Roman soldiers were not Italian.
Yeah, that's a very good piece of historic analysis that they were all kinds of men.
Well, you're making up names. Gaul and...
That is a real province of Rome, Gaul. That was what France is today.
Ma'am, listen,
look,
the point is
the
that
two of you
this has
the fact
nothing
that
to do with
was
Italian.
By an Italian woman, much like
this
myself.
This has nothing to do with
short,
Italian.
Aussie.
It has everything to
and
do
is underdeveloped
with
in many
the world
ways.
At large.
Okay.
Christ came for the world. This has nothing to do with Italians.
Did you see the movie, Pastor
Thomas Francis? I'll be seeing it tomorrow. I'm picking up some of my African pastor friends at the Atlanta airport right now.
Well, when you do that,
tomorrow.
You say to them...
I don't need to see the... Ma'am, I don't need to see the movie. I've read the Gospels, and I've read world history. Books.
Yes, but nowhere in the Gospels does it say they hooked the tendon in the bicep in his left arm and ripped it out and used it for a rope.
Secular history shows us that those scourgings literally ripped the muscles off those men's back. That's secular history, ma'am.
All right, Pastor... I'm sorry, Francis, is it, sir?
Yes, sir.
I have another gentleman. Is this from Joyful Union in Bellflower, California? Pastor Rennick, how are you?
I'm very good, sir.
And do you join with Pastor Francis?
I join with this gentleman in saying that the gospel is clear that our Lord was scourged. Now, scourging is a horrific torture.
Well,
and for this woman to come on and say, you know, Italians did it, or black people did it, this is well beyond the pale. Don't you agree, what's your name?
Yes, yes, Pastor, I agree.
All right.
As secular as
also,
so
I'd like to say,
scourging was a horrible way to do
it. Yeah, it was a horrible, hold on for a minute, Pastor Rennick.
Well, I want to say something else. Black people might have killed Jesus. They might have been black Jews. I don't know. I'm sure they had their reasons. But the whole...
What do you mean they had their reasons?
I'm just saying that was the law of the land. But for you to get this white woman on here and start bagging on black people, I tag and everything else, I think it's wrong. And the FCC in Washington, D.C. needs to hear about the kind of hateful programming...
Sir, this is not a hateful show.
Well, you're allowing it to happen, sir.
All right, Pastor Francis, go ahead.
Yeah, well, my comments
I want to make another point about the...
Would you please shut up, sir?
Well, my comments are based on historical facts.
Mm-hmm.
Historical facts teaches that this has nothing to do with race. This was for all mankind. Not for one race or the other. This was for all mankind. And secular history teaches us that this Bible account is accurate.
All right. Well,
this woman has turned it into a race issue.
No, I have not turned it into a race issue, Pastor Rennick. I have tried to say...
This is Pastor Francis.
I'm sorry. I've simply tried to say, why can't Mel Gibson work out whatever problem he's got against Italians finally and not keep putting it into his movies? He hated Italians in The Patriot. He made us look bad in Braveheart. He made us look bad in...
What do you mean in Braveheart?
Where'd she come up with this at?
In Braveheart, he made Italians look like idiots.
And how is that?
By raising their dresses and showing their backsides.
Those were Scottish warriors. Those.
Hey, give me a word.
Well, you know, the past is... Mr. Henry?
Yes, go ahead.
I'd like to say at Joyful Union this weekend, hey, I'll tell you how he made white people look bad. Lethal Weapon 3 and 4. How about that? You can say he made the white man look bad.
You know something? I hope you burn in hell, because I love both those films. They were an achievement. They were film noir at their best. Burn, Pastor, burn.
You white...
All right, well, I've lost all of them. Pastor, thank you for your comments.
And Bill, I like
the historical perspective there on the guys coming from all over the place. Thank you, sir. Mel Gibson made the white folks look bad in Lethal Weapon in 3 and 4. I can't disagree with that. All right, 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. The eighth wonder of the world. The Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Oh, no. Now I realize what's going to happen. It just occurred to me now, with this movie by Mel Gibson, now it's going to be hip to be Catholic. Oh, now everybody's going to want to go to Mass. Do the ashes on the forehead, do the Stations of the Cross, light candles in front of Mary, pray to the Joseph statue, be an altar boy, maybe even be molested by a priest. I'm just joking, and I don't think that violates FCC guidelines. That's a very nice ref. It's newsworthy. Jesus. We're going to get into, next hour, we're getting into what happened last week in the radio industry. We're also going to be interviewing Michael Powell, the FCC chairman. I'd like you to know that. You don't want to miss that. We will have Michael Powell live on these airwaves. But we'll get into next hour what happened to the radio industry last week. It was similar to what happened to Jesus in that movie. Except Jesus is a far better man than anybody in the radio business is ever going to be. Now, I just thought of that. Oh, yeah, it's going to be all hip. Like, I went to Mass with... See, I grew up Catholic, but I'm what they call a Jack Catholic. I'm fallen away. I'm a fallen away Catholic. I go to Mass, and I do take communion, but I haven't gone to what's called reconciliation, where you sit down and you lay out to the priest all the horrific crimes you've committed in the last 20 years and hope that he doesn't say anything to any of the authorities. But growing up Catholic, now I'm talking about this movie, Passion of the Christ, which I hear is, really, I hear it's very, what is the word we can use for it? I'm serious, I haven't heard any buzz about a movie like this since The Exorcist came out, when people walked out of movie theaters stunned, like they didn't want to drive home alone. You know, this is the kind of movie that jars people. And everybody's going to see this thing. Baptists, born-agains, all kinds of Christians, right? Well, growing up Catholic, you'd go to Mass and you had hanging around your neck and you had a little rosary. We don't call it a cross in Catholicism. We call it a crucifix. And on the crucifix, very clearly, is Jesus nailed to the cross and he's dangling there and he don't look too good. He looks like he could use a sleep, you know, maybe a shower. And people would always say, "Well, you Catholics, boy, you are really something else." Why? Well, look at you. You revel in that, the suffering of that man. You walk into your house of worship, and you look at the bloodied, dangling body of that man nailed to a cross. Why do you do that? Well, I never had any answers for that, and I still don't, but I might reference this movie, Passion of the Christ, to let you kind of give you a clue as to why Catholics have that crucifix. It's because the actual moment of suffering, the actual horrific, torturous death of Jesus is a very significant part of the Catholic liturgy and Catholicism. So, not that I dig it, not that it's anything that I'm necessarily, because I never, one of the things that I get, and one of the things that I reason why I fell away from Catholicism, I don't want to be guilted into believing in anything. If I've got to be guilted into it, there's something wrong with it. If you've got to frighten me into believing something, or guilt me into believing something, or manipulate my emotions into accepting some school of thought as opposed to allowing my own experience in life to guide me to that moment, then there's something basically faulty about your philosophy. That's why that guy hanging off the cross is one of the reasons why I stopped going to Mass. Now, my fine feathered friend, Mr. Gibson, who is about as traditionally Catholic as, I mean, Mother Rosalia on the loudspeaker there saying,
"Yeah, pink and green."
That's Gibson. He wants to guilt you not only into believing in it, he wants to guilt you into vomiting over it. And I say, good for you, Mel. I hear it's a great movie. I'm going to go see it tomorrow. I may see it twice. Just to kind of, you know, put a light on the day. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. Here's Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
Coming up, an interview with FCC Chairman Michael Powell. Why? Well, I'll tell you why. Something happened last week in the radio business. Most of you are unaware of it, and most of you shouldn't be really aware of it. These are just internal things, but I bring it up to you as a example of what happens in all of our lives when you work for people or when you work in an industry. Something monumental happened in my industry last week. In fact, I don't think I've ever seen anything like this in the 31 years. 31 years in May. I was a punk kid. I was 20 years old. I got into this business, and it seems like I'm still a punk kid. I still feel like I'm sitting there in my baseball jersey with my long hair and mutton chop sideburns, chain-smoking the cigarettes, and playing stupid records like Robert Goulet's Everybody's Out of Town. 31 years, I've never seen what happened in my business, what happened last week. Last week, the radio executives of this country were summoned to Washington. And they went obediently. Why? Well, a few weeks ago, you might remember that this washed-up Vegas-style hack named Janet Jackson, who, seriously, you know, you think I over critique here. She's a washout, man. She hasn't done anything pivotal or interesting creatively in years. She is as dull as they come. And knowing it, what did she do? She took her clothes off on TV during the Super Bowl. She did it in collaboration with the CBS Television Network. That's my opinion. But I'm going to tell you right now, I'll take my clothes off and run down Wilshire Boulevard in broad daylight if I'm wrong. How are you going to prove me wrong, though? So, see, that'll never happen. And that's a good thing, believe me. But I can tell you right now, in collaboration with the CBS Television Network, she took her clothes off on television. And what happened after that is one of the most confusing, mind-blowing, hypocritical, awe-inspiring things that I think I've ever been privy to. Who got in trouble? The radio business. They, like they usually do back there at the FCC, talk real big about, this is shocking and we never want it to happen again. But they have yet to address television. They have yet to find CBS. I haven't seen anybody over there get fired. I haven't seen anything happen to the world of TV. What did happen, though, was they did what they usually do. They summoned the radio executives, and they wagged their finger at them, and they said, and you guys better clean up your act. As a result of that, there were a number of firings last week of radio talent. There was an earthquake. Seismic proportions, as they like to say. My business that I've given 31 years of my life to, went back to Washington, D.C., and rolled over like cabin boys for the FCC. Radio's response was not to say, we didn't do this, Janet Jackson did it. Radio's response was not, we are artists as well, and we're going to protect our artists, and if you can give us individual examples, okay, but we're not going to blanket shut down our industry because you guys haven't got the temerity to deal with television. The FCC, as I've said countless times, does not have what it takes in the intestinal fortitude department to take on Tom and Jerry, let alone television. They couldn't take on a band of wild mice or Mises. The FCC is never going to do anything to CBS because they haven't got the money, they haven't got the guts, they haven't got the time, they haven't got anybody there with any integrity to do it. But what they do have integrity for, what they always have integrity for, is to bust down on radio. And what the radio executives of this country always have the integrity to do is fire radio people. Disc jockeys, talk show hosts, program directors, general managers, you name it. They've always got that much integrity. They can really wag their finger and say, you guys are all fired, but stand up for us? Forget it. You want to know why? I'll tell you why. Radio is, as it's often been called, the stepson or stepsister or stepchild of the entertainment business. We are not a legitimate entertainment enterprise. We don't have artists. We have disc jockeys. We have talk show hosts, but we're not artists. And so we're treated like janitors. And we are hired and fired at will, and I can tell you right now that what I've put into this business over 31 years, for what I've put into this business, what I take out of it is marginal at best. Marginal. For what I've contributed to my industry. And what do we get in return? We get a lot of people that can't stand up for you. Now, in television, they back up their artists. In movies, they back them up. In literature, but in radio, for some reason, when the ship starts to sink, man, they don't start throwing the ballast overboard. They don't start throwing over maybe big crates of oil. They start throwing the people overboard. Now, one of the reasons why this happens is the radio business itself. There's no critique in our business. In other words, you can pick up the paper and read reviews of movies. You can read reviews of theater. You can read reviews of television. You don't read radio reviews. What you read are stupid radio columnists like this guy down here at the Orange County Register or some of these jackballs online who just list gossip or they list the personal appearances. You know, Jamie and Danny are going to be opening up a Krispy Kreme. This kind of stuff. You don't hear anybody critiquing what we do. What they do say in radio is if anybody's different, they're bad. That's all they know. Anybody does anything different, it's got to be bad. That's the extent of the critique we get in this business. So as a result, nobody here is taken seriously, least of all by our employers. And when someone says, you guys are going to pay for Janet Jackson's sins, no one stands up and says, why? Why? When are you going to take Les Moonves from CBS and give him a fine? When are you going to fine the guys at Fox or at NBC? When are you going to start doing some of that? Last I heard, Bono said the F word on MTV and the FCC said it was okay. Yeah, it's all right because it was a descriptive use of the word. But if I guarantee Phil Henry used the F word in the exact same context, I'd be fired before I reached the next commercial break. There'd be another guy sitting in this chair. Because we're radio people, because we can be pushed around, because we've allowed ourselves to be pushed around. I've tried to make this point in the past, and I've been mocked by other people in the business. I've tried to say to other people in radio, we should really pull together a little bit as artists and be taken more seriously that way and insist that when people write about us in newspapers that they take our medium seriously. I turn down a lot of newspaper interview requests. Why? Because I don't want to see another article written about the Phil Henry Show done in this comic book reportage of, wow, he sure does fool a lot of people with those voices. I just stopped talking to those guys. However, we're going to the HBO Comedy Festival, and my understanding is I get to participate in a roundtable discussion with the New York Times on Thursday. I'll be in this discussion with a couple of other people from the TV and entertainment. Oh, man, am I going to look forward to that, because I know those cats in Washington read the New York Times. I'll lay in pretty good, baby. I'll lay in about 2 weeks' supplies on that one. So, fortunately for me, what the FCC is worrying about is content having to do scatological content, sexual content. We don't do a lot of that on our show. We don't need to. We're funny as opposed to lame. Speaking of lame, did anybody see Sean Penn last night win that award? Not that he's a great actor, but did you hear that WMD comment? Oh, boy. You know what, Penn? You really are a lightweight, man. Just take the award and walk off. Anyway, Michael Powell of the FCC, by the way, it won't really be him, okay, in case he wants to sue me. Interview with the head of the FCC, Michael Powell, coming up here on The Phil Henry Show. Our email address, phs@philhenryshow.com.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. One 800 449 8686. The Phil Henry Show is back.
Speaking of the Academy Awards, the high point last night for me was Will Ferrell and Jack Black with that "You're Boring" song. That was great. And did you notice when they mentioned Sting's name as a nominee, Will Ferrell goes, "And the Cold Mountain Song by Sting." He laid it in there real gay. It was beautiful. Boy, is that Sting something else, man? That guy is a pain. He's just a nagging pain in the back of your neck. Sting. Yeah, I can make love to my wife 12 hours straight because I do tantra yoga. Well, whatever, Jack. Go away, man. Please go away. No more acoustic versions of Message in a Bottle. Just get out of here, you and you. Hey. And poor little Phil Collins standing next to him. He looks like a little Cockney bartender now. He's just, hey. Both of those cats are so not rock and roll. It's like, what? Did you catch actually, were you in rock bands? And you, Sting, what are you, a model or an actor? What are you doing out there anyway? Every time that guy opens his mouth, something really dumb comes out. That guy is such an unbelievably stuffed shirt. Oh, man, do we really need to hear about you over the, you and your over-the-hill overrated self? What a dog dropping. So Will Ferrell, I think, said it very nicely.
Sting.
The low point of the Oscars last night? You guessed it, Billy Crystal. Boy, did he suck.
He sucked. Take it from me. You weren't no good, Billy. You should have quit while you were ahead, baby. You look tired. You look bored. You look, you know, your timing was way off. The jokes, whatever. Bring back Steve Martin, please, while he's still alive. Bring him back. We can't bring back Bob Hope, but at least we can get Steve Martin back. Nothing happened last night of any consequence other than Will Ferrell and Jack Black. And I was very happy for Sean Penn. I haven't seen Mystic River. Who was the guy that I really liked? I liked Bill Murray. I saw him in Lost in Translation, but I hadn't seen the other flick yet, and I will. And I thought, well, Penn wins. Please just go up and take the award and kind of surprise me. Surprise me, Penn. I don't know. Talk about, you never hear people when they win an award say, here are the movies that I liked to watch when I was a kid. They always like, and I'd like to thank my agent, my butler, my maid, the guy that waxes the car. I'd like to thank a kid that threw a rock at me last week. There was this list that's dull for everybody, but he just wants to get it out. What would be really fun would be for them to get up and say, thank you for this tribute. You know why I got into movies? Because I used to watch this movie or that movie. It's just something different. But, of course, you never get it because they're actors, which means that they know how to emote. They know how to live in the moment and to create a genuine emotional moment. But it doesn't mean they're brain surgeons. For the most part, they're probably stupid people. And, Penn, you proved me right again. He got up there. He sounded kind of dopey. And then he got off that little WMD line. One thing that actors know, besides that there's no WMDs, and about 15 real lame brain lunkheads go, you know, Sean, here's the thing. You're a lightweight. Now, what do I mean by a lightweight? What I mean by that is this. You can't speak publicly, man. You are an actor, and you'd be better off doing what De Niro does. Don't open your mouth to anybody, because every time I hear De Niro open his mouth, he sounds like a dumb stevedore. He sounds like some guy that's wiping the oil off of his hands after he loaded another barrel full of cat guts into a truck. You know what I'm going to do when I get that heavyweight belt, huh? That's when they're going to know about me. Robert De Niro in Raging Bull. That's right, huh? That's right! Stupid, stupid! Mr. De Niro, that was a wonderful film. Can you tell us how you researched that?
I don't know. Oh, man.
Why did we even bring you in here, man? Get him out of here. We'll be right back after this word from Alpo. Penn's the same way. He couldn't open his mouth and get out two syllables without it sounding like some sort of odious gas emission. Something between a belch and just a little bleep. Sean Penn gets up there and he gets off that line, and then a bunch of other stuff that didn't make any sense. You're a lightweight, man. You're a poser. Just make your movies, get your award, go home. And do what you do, which is have your photograph taken occasionally with the cigarette kind of dangling from your mouth in the hopes that somebody will actually believe you are a rebel on the level of an outsider there in the Midwest, kind of like that, you know, those movies that What's-His-Face did, the Coppola, Rumblefish, all that baloney. Yeah, you're one of them, man, huh? You know, you had the processed pompadour and you were in a gang. Don't let anybody know that you were born of Hollywood blue blood, that you got a silver spoon shoved up your you-know-what, and that you never, you know, look, you never chased a... You never chased a dog down the street for a bone in your life. You're just a genuine moron. But you're a great actor. So that happened. What else happened? That was it. Oh, thank you, Janice. What did you say again?
Adrian Brody.
Adrian Brody won the Academy Award last year for The Pianist, which was a hell of a movie, and it was a hell of a performance. And he did something that was just charmed everybody and was just one of those spur-of-the-moment things that was great. When he walked up to get his award, Halle Berry was giving it out, and he just walked right up to her, put his arms around her, and planted one right on her lips. And it was tremendous. It was a great moment, a genuine moment, right? Now it's been a year. What Adrian Brody doesn't know is that nobody remembers who won Best Actor last year. I don't even remember who won Best Picture. I couldn't tell you. I don't even know if they had an Academy Awards last year, right? But he thinks everybody remembers, so when he gets up there, he starts doing shtick with a Banaka spray. He starts doing a Banaka shtick. Because he's going to give out the Best Chick Award, the Best Female Award, right?
So he starts doing the Banaca spray with a wink, wink, and a nudge, nudge, and everyone's going, what is he got? It's like Tourette's? What is his problem? Freaking guy's got muscular dystrophy or something. He's up there going, watch this. I thought the cat was huffing paint. I really did. I thought he had a little miniature bottle there of Dutch Boy, and he thought he'd give himself another blast just before he gave out the award. So then Charlize Theron wins it. And did he kiss her? I couldn't bear to watch. I don't know if he did or not. Did he try to? Some about he did? Did she? Oh, okay. In any event, look at kid. Just stop it, will you? Nobody remembers the Academy Award winner from last year, the year before, the year before. No one remembers. We like to watch. One of those things that no one can even tell you. We win. We know who won the World Series. We can tell you who won the Stanley Cup. We even know who won the freaking Masters. But we can't tell you who won an Oscar to save our lives if somebody put a loaded shotgun to the heads of all of our children. Who won Best Picture last year, 2002? I don't know. Who won it for 2001? Who was the best actress? The only reason why I know was Adrian Brody is when he got up and he started doing the Banaca shtick. I go, oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, okay. Who won for, who was the best supporting hermaphrodite? I don't know. Who was the best supporting dwarf in a lead, in a tall role? Given that Lord of the Rings, they better start giving some midget awards out. I ain't kidding you, man. It's getting a little stupid now. Wizard of Oz and now this, and not one of those midgets gets recognized. I think there's something wrong, baby. Very, very wrong. You got all them little people, and not one of them gets any... Well, oh, you're saying it was all computer? Okay, never mind. Who won for best... Seriously, I don't know who won the best picture. Yeah, sure, the people start calling and telling you, I don't want to know, I don't want to put anybody on air. I'm just telling you, that's how insignificant it is to the culture at large. So, Adrian, if I may call you Adrian, I know a lot of people like to call you Shirley, just knock that stuff off. But I can tell you, this year, it was Lord of the Rings, Best Director, Lord of the Rings, Best Actor, Lord of the Rings, Actress, Lord of the Rings, Best Animated Feature, Lord of the Rings. Oh, no, Seabiscuit. All right, 1-800-44... When are we going to start giving out the animal awards, too? Coming up, an interview with the head of the FCC, Michael Pollan, on why he's persecuting the radio industry and not taking appropriate action against the real offending entity, the television industry. They're the ones that let Janet Jackson take her clothes off. We're just the ones who let Janet Jackson take her clothes off at our houses, at our parties. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
And Haiti, what about that? Yeah, right. Okay, we'll go down there and make that thing all straightened out too, huh? Like it's our fault in the first place. It is, actually. We're the guys that put that slob baby Doc Duvalier in there. All of these guys, what was the guy who ran it? Maurice Chevalier? What a scumbag he was. Oh, I'm sorry. It was Papa Doc Duvalier. Maurice Chevalier was the grandfather. You know, the guy that sang, thank heaven for little girls. Well, he was also a brutal, butchering, massacring animal. But he wore a nice-looking straw hat. And he waltzed down the Champs-Élysées. Look, let me tell you about Haiti. It's a toilet. Okay? That's number one. No cat that ever got in there as president of that country was going to work things out in any sense, in any respect, without a fairly intelligent electorate supporting him. You can't put a president in there and say, let's have democratic elections and put a president in there and expect the illiterate idiots of Haiti to, you know, coalesce into some sort of a thoughtful, progressive electorate. It's this is a country of illiterate peasants, borderline morons, drug dealers, poor, oppressed people. It is the worst example of what happens when you colonize a people, when you colonize them and you leave them without any skill for self-government. You get Haiti. And America is to blame for propping up that guy Duvalier in the 50s and 60s, for that baby doc, that fat slob of a son of his, and for every other frog that ever ran that joint. The frogs, the French, they're responsible because they were running that show in the first place. Can't blame us for that. Now the French are down there, the Marines are down there. Why don't we let Haiti have what we're giving Iraq, man? Why don't we give them a military government? And when we decide they get to have a democratically elected government, that's when they get to have one. See, that's what you get, folks, when you get this self-determination without any limits. In other words, you get a country that has no record of democratic rule, and they are demanding elections, and they're demanding this, and of course the American people are all, oh, gotta get out of Iraq and let the Iraqi people determine what they need to do. You do that, and you're gonna have Haiti. If the country doesn't have any history of democratic rule, if they don't have... Look what happened to Russia when they tried to have a republic. They turned into a bunch of commies. Look what happened to the Nazis, or the Germans when they tried to have a republic. They turned into a bunch of Nazis. You got to kind of ease into it, baby. The need down in Haiti is exactly what we got in Iraq. Get a military administration in there, and then when we say go, they go. When we say jump, they jump. When we say jump, they say how high. You know, that's what you do. Meanwhile, you know what they got down there now? The people down there are so stupid and confused. They don't know what they're doing. They got the guy that's coming in now, this militia guy, was the former head of the Tonton Macoute. You know who they were? Well, let me just give you a couple of hints. Roman soldiers. And a guy tied to a pillar, okay? That's what those guys did. They were a death squad. A death squad. Now the people of Haiti, they seem to forget. They're bringing that guy in like he's George Washington. This is how utterly befuddled those people are. The place is a toilet bowl. Disease, drug dealing, poverty on a scale you couldn't even begin to imagine. You know, it's really funny in America. We talk about poverty in America. Do you know, this is the God's truth, 40% of all homes in America that live in poverty, quote unquote, have owned their own homes. Now, that's the God's truth. 40%. Of the people that live in so-called poverty in America own their own homes. 70% have two color television sets. This is poverty American style. We can't even begin to grasp what poverty is. We talk about Americans living in poverty. We're talking about people who own a house that is, you know, is only maybe 1,200 square feet. You got a country down there in Haiti that they would be better off dropping an atomic bomb on it and starting all over again as maybe a sandbox for kids. Just a floating sandbox. So now we got to go down there and cool that thing out with the help of the French, whatever help they're going to provide, and we're going to pretend like we're going to bring in another democratic government. We got to do what we did in Iraq. We got to stay down there. We're going to tell them how it's going to go, when it's going to go, and whether or not it's going to go. And believe me, they'll be happier people for it. And when the time comes for them to have a so-called democracy, we'll blow the whistle. Don't even worry about it, okay? And until then, everybody just shut up. Otherwise, you're going to have one slob after another running the show down there from that piece of garbage that's coming in now, that former death squad guy, this Aristide who couldn't find it with both hands. And I don't think it was that guy's fault at all. He was just trying to be a president, trying to appease a corrupt police force, a corrupt militia, a corrupt army, trying to make the poor people happy, trying to make the rich capitalists down there who are sucking the very lifeblood of the country out of it, keeping them happy. How the hell does anybody do that job? How can anybody do... Thomas Jefferson couldn't do that job. Now, I know a lot of you guys don't even know what the hell it is I'm talking about. I'm talking about Haiti. Why am I talking about it? It's only a few hundred miles off the coast of America. It's right down there in the Caribbean. It might not make a bad place to go and surf someday, a place to lay around and drink some rum punches in. But until then, we got to sit there and watch them just sort of sweat away with their AIDS epidemic and their drug running and their poverty and their, you know, one government after another, after another, after another, after another. That's why the Caribbean, I wouldn't give you 5 cents for the whole place. People talk about the Caribbean. Hey, where are you going? Oh, we're going to go to the Caribbean. Oh, man, again? What's wrong with that? Oh, that's, the place is horrible. It's horrible. Even the U.S. Virgin Islands, even places like the British Virgin Islands, where the people you'd think would be semi-happy, everybody down there's got a screwed-up look on their face, like they can't stand getting out of bed in the morning. You go down there on vacation, and you go down there to spend your hard-earned money, and you walk up to a bartender down there, and the guy's giving you a look like Heinrich Himmler. He's looking at you like you're the worst thing that ever happened, like you're a bad odor that just came filtering into the room from an open toilet someplace. Angry-looking people, unhappy-looking people, rude as hell. Why would you want to spend your money in the Caribbean when you can do as I did? Boy, I wish I had some music to cue here. When you can do as I did. Go to Mexico. That's right. Maria and I spent a beautiful week in Mexico, my favorite place in the world to go. We just got back from Mexico, and let me tell you what. It's south of the border. The people are beautiful. The food is unbelievable. The beaches are, we don't have beaches in America like they've got, especially along the Caribbean coast or the Gulf of Mexico coast of Mexico. The water is the color of turquoise, real turquoise. Yes, go to Mexico. All right. And we went to the best sushi bar I've ever been into in my... We went down to Cabo this time, because I like going down there. It's short. It's down to Baja Peninsula. And like I said, you know, the people smile at you. How you doing? Hey, welcome to our store. Welcome to our place. You know, whatever. What do you need, baby? Well, I'd like a margarita. I got that. I got it going on, man. Can I get... And I found a sushi bar down in... you know how I always come back from vacation? I give you guys the big tip. Here it is. The place is called Nixon, N-I-C-K-S-A-N, sushi bar in Cabo, Cabo San Lucas, because there's two of them. The best you'll ever have. And there's a little joint where you can get your 2 pounds of lobster up in Cabo de San Jose called the Tropicana Inn. Plus, they've got a real funky band that plays some of that crazy Latin stuff. And you can dance the night away. You can just twirl away to the Quicksilver arpeggios on the accordion. It's a gas, man. I'm telling you, it's so much fun. And like I said, and the country is coming along. Mexico's got problems. They got big problems, you know. But compared to some of the places I've been... And I'll tell you something else. Los Cabos, that's beautiful, man. I mean, the streets are clean. The homes are nice. It looks like a very profitable part of the country. And you know how I used to feel sorry sometimes for a lot of the hotel workers, et cetera, et cetera? Those cats have one of the strongest unions going. The Mexican Hotel and Service Workers Union is heavy osity, baby. No wonder those guys all look happy. So with a beautiful place like Mexico, just south of the border, with a fantastic tequila like the Don Julio Blanco, or as I discovered in the airport coming home at duty-free, the 1942 Don Julio, which is just an añejo, and it's not from 42. They're just celebrating the fact that they started making it in 42. Whatever. Why do you want to go to the Cara freaking bean? You being nuts. All right, coming up, interview with the head of the FCC, Michael Powell. You don't want to miss this. 1-800-449-8686. The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
From Washington, D.C., we are joined now by the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, Michael Powell. It was a big week last week. The FCC came down pretty hard on the radio industry. A zero-tolerance policy has been put into place for any kind of borderline programming. And this is in the wake of the Janet Jackson thing on television. So, again, we have a, you know, in my opinion, Mr. Powell, we have a little bit of a dichotomy there.
No, we don't have a dichotomy, Phil. What you fail to understand, and first of all, thank you for having me on your program.
You're welcome.
When I took this job a number of years ago, and I don't remember how long ago it's been, because I just, you know, I just...
You got a problem with that? Or?
Yeah, I don't remember things very well, but nobody told me that the job entailed having to have integrity, and I think it's unfair of you people in the media to keep coming down on me knowing that I'm operating under that handicap. Now,
you didn't know. Did they tell you that you needed to have integrity and honesty to be an FCC commissioner?
No, they did not. No, they didn't.
Well, I find that very difficult to believe, sir.
Well, you can believe what you want, Phil, but had I been told that you needed to be honest and have integrity, I never would have taken the job. And this is what you people in the media fail to understand. Now, I did what I did to the radio industry for the obvious reason that I have no integrity and that it's easier to punish the radio industry than it is the television industry, since I get an envelope once a week from, Les Moon at CBS, and he provides me with, a number of perks.
Are you being serious now, sir?
Am I being serious about what?
You get an envelope of money from CBS just to kind of to rule things in their favor?
Didn't I just tell you I don't have any integrity?
So in other words, you're not to blame who? The people that hired you?
Yes, the Congress of the United States is to blame. Okay? I'm dishonest, I have no integrity, I'm a hypocrite, and I'm a coward. Now, had anybody asked me, are you a coward, I would have said yes, but they didn't, see? They said they just put me in the job, and then they say, oh, you're not supposed to be a coward. See, that's the way they do things in Washington. That's why I'm upset. And
then why don't you resign?
I don't have the integrity to resign. Oh, my God, what am I talking to, an idiot?
Well, but what's happening, the effect is, sir, that the radio business right now, and by the way, all of that commentary about you taking an envelope from CBS is simply our opinion.
Of course.
But the effect here, sir, is that you are not to blame.
I'm not to blame, Phil. I'm taking out and putting punishment on the radio business because I don't have the courage to take on the television industry. Now, I wish somebody had asked me when they confirmed me, are you a courageous man? I would have said, no, I'm not. Then we would have been done with it.
So the advice and consent, or whatever the process is, to name an FCC commissioner was not thorough?
No, it was not thorough, and that's the point I'm trying to make to you and your public. Had they asked me, do you have courage, do you have integrity, and do you have a basic code of decency, I would have been very honest and said, no, I don't. And then they could have said, oh, well, I'm sorry, we need that in our commissioner. I assumed they didn't, because I'd seen all the other commissioners before me, you see. So they kind of turned it on me. Before me, all these guys were slobs. Now I'm supposed to be the Virgin Mary? I think it's very unfair.
All right, I'd like to talk to you more about it, but I have to go to a very important flashback, one that's very funny and interesting from a previous show.
I don't blame you, because I'm dull.
Yes, you are. Thank you, Commissioner Michael Powell from the FCC.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. He said that had they asked him, do you have integrity, he would have said, no, I don't, and then they never would have hired him, so it's not his fault. Okay, so Phil Henry Show, coming up now, Justin McElroy on something or other. About what? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, adults lied about the music because it's all about drugs. Here's Justin.
Phil Henry Show.
Comedy gold.
My problem is that, I'm a Christian, and I have to say I'm deeply offended by some of the moral standpoints that this guy's coming from. There's a measure of hypocrisy to...
I mean, are you trying to tell me, why don't you and your friends, do you listen to me? I mean, Mr. Henry and his friends, they sit around and listen to Laura Nero records and have sex with other men.
Who has sex with other men?
Guys like in Mr. Henry's generation.
Really?
What are you talking about, man?
You're smoking crack,
hey,
guy.
Hey, dude.
You're smoking crack.
Hey, dude, what are you listening to?
You mean to tell me
that
ecstasy is not a drug? You mean to tell... I got an Offspring record in my cabinet right now. You're going to tell me that Offspring doesn't smoke dope?
Hey,
that they don't do drugs?
You never listen
to Offspring.
Hey, man, it doesn't matter.
You're freaking blind,
hey,
man.
Dude, wait a second,
and you tell
man.
Me you go to church,
okay.
And you got a minister, but I just heard you use the Lord's name
in
vain twice.
I heard that too, Jonah.
Twice.
Okay, man, are you talking to something, man?
On the radio before. You're unbelievable.
Wait a minute, man.
You have none of your facts. You don't know anything about these bands that you're talking about. You make some valid points, and there is a valid point in people telling you not to do drugs, and when they listen to music that supports drug use.
Okay,
there
can I make a point there,
but you've gone way...
Let me make a point, man.
Talk for days.
I just want to make one point. You're only Christian because...
Hold on, Jonah. You got to let this guy talk. You got to let him talk.
Sorry. This guy, Jonah, is only Christian because his parents were listening to Pink Floyd on acid and decided to name you Jonah because it's out of the Bible. Because they're on acid, okay?
I didn't listen to Pink Floyd. In fact, I'm pretty young. I'm older than you, but we're both in the same generation. When I was your age, I wasn't allowed to listen to secular music at all. I wasn't allowed to listen to anything but Christian music.
Hey, dude.
I didn't. I wasn't even allowed to listen to the radio.
Hey, dude, Offspring.
If you listen to the lyrics of Offspring and some of the other bands that you just named, if you listen to their lyrics,
right.
they are far beyond any of the music or the vast majority of the music
man.
That came out of the baby boomer age.
Okay, I want to make a point here, both gentlemen. First of all, your point, I believe, Justin, that you made to me off the air was that these bands in interviews admitted to using drugs. Bands like the Grateful Dead.
Yeah, I mean, they're so stupid. I mean, that's our parents are liars, and the bands they listen to are the stupidest.
Kurt Cobain had his head on straight, though, didn't he, guy?
Hey, tell you what, man. I don't listen to that, okay, old man? Hey, old man, I don't listen to Nirvana. I don't listen to Nirvana, dude. Oh, God, man. You know, coming to a modern age, not the Stone Age. I'm not talking about Kurt. Okay? I'm talking about bands that I like. AFI, they don't do drugs. Linkin Park, they don't do drugs, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, oh, okay.
No drugs, no drug influence there.
Okay, if you want to have a...
Hey.
What does that mean?
Oh, this dude's probably got, like, five forms of drip going just because he's so down with Skynyrd and you know...
He has some deep-seated issues
dude,
there.
Dude, you got lesions all over your
you know,
penile area.
You know, your minister heard you... I hope he's listening to this.
That's no kidding.
I hope he is, because
no
if he heard you...
What?
If he heard you judge people the way you are...
Oh, you're judging
the
me.
The Lord's name in vain.
You're judging me. You're judging me.
Speak with the disrespect
you're
that
judging
you've
me.
Spoken... Concerning your parents, when the Bible is very clear
dude,
on how a person
my parents
needs to
don't respect
their
me, also okay, and my preacher gets more quiff than anybody, man.
Go to a satanic church?
No, dude, I go to a Christian church. My preacher's got 2 19-year-old girlfriends. Beat that.
Oh, okay. Well, that guy's a really great preacher, isn't he? 2 19-year-old girlfriends.
Hey, Jonah, I think the whale's waiting for you.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy gold.
This is the Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
You know, my good friend Mr. Pelton and I were talking a few minutes ago, and he made the point, I don't care if you're Christian or you're Catholic or you're not, and if you believe Jesus was God or you don't. If you look at that movie, that The Passion of the Christ, in no other way, you can look at it this way, that it's a guy that took on a responsibility and saw it through to the bitter, rotten end. And but when I say rotten, I mean that just the horrific way that he died. Just a guy who took on a responsibility and saw it through. Now, how often can you say that happens in society today? It probably happens a lot more than we think. We certainly don't have any example of it from the people who are, quote, famous or so-called heroes. So you got to look around. You really got to look for it. But even if you didn't believe Jesus was God, let's just say it was just this guy. There's something to admire in a man who, well, I'm going to do this thing. Yeah, but you're going to die, man. I'm going to do it. And you're going to die horribly. I'm going to do it. And you're going to just, it's going to be horrific. You won't even believe what's going to happen to you, even when it's happening, to quote my main man Coogan in Coogan's Bluff. And he did it. And that's an example. To follow, right? You know, you can say you're a Christian even from that standpoint. You could say, I like that guy, Jesus of Nazareth, because that guy did something that I don't see a whole lot of people do. He took on something and he saw it through to the bitter end, man. He did it. He didn't cop out. He didn't chicken out. He didn't make an excuse. He didn't sleep in. He didn't say, well, you know, I know I got to get crucified. Listen, Can we go get a margarita and talk about this? He went ahead and he did it, man. And, you know, so that's a valuable thing. I'm not talking up Christianity, but you know what? You know me. I think outside of the box a little bit. You know, I'm a Democrat who's, you know, like a Bush fan and all of the things you're not supposed to be. And I know that it would probably make my Christian friends upset to say, "Well, if you're going to admire the life of Jesus, then you have to admire it all the way. You have to believe he was the Son of God." No, I don't. No, I don't at all. No, I think it's enough to say. And maybe some people who reject God and reject religion because of whatever reason it may be, God let them down. He hurt their feelings. He didn't. You know, the puppy dog died when you prayed that it wouldn't, and your mommy and daddy got divorced even though you prayed real hard that they wouldn't, or whatever perception you have that God is a really bad guy. You know, just get that out of your head for a minute and take a look at this man who was supposedly alive 2,000 years ago. I don't know. You don't know. I don't know. Let's say it's just a legend and a myth. Let's just say it's like Ulysses or Helen of Troy or any of the many thousands of stories that we've heard down through the years that we're told to provide an example of how to live. Aesop, that was his trip, right? Didn't he come up with his fables to say, well, here, the rabbit one day, and he went down the hole, or whatever he used to say. The only thing I know about Aesop's fables were on those fractured flickers with Rocky and Bullwinkle. Remember that? That's all I know about Aesop. Aesop's fables, you know. You could say to this guy, Jesus, had a hell of a thing he had to do, and he didn't shirk from the responsibility. That's called being a hero. That's a heroic thing. And heroism, oh man, it's a valuable thing, baby. Because it's really heroism is putting your life on the line. So that's what the guy did. And if you want to admire him for that, then you can. Then I think that's a valid thing. You don't have to be religious. Just say that's the way it... Okay, now look at this. I got David on. What does he want? Every time I get a call from David Hall, it's... here is the Vice President of Syndication for our show. David?
Yeah, I'm right here.
What can I help you with?
Well, you know, you're bringing me on like it's a pain in the rear end.
No, it's just that you call right in the middle and I'm supposed to put your call on the air.
Yeah, you're supposed to put my call on the air. Because I heard you last hour talking about how they're selling nails, replicas of the nails that went through Jesus' hands.
They are. There's some religious stores. Am I right or am I wrong about that, Janice? There's religious stores selling replicas of the nails that they nailed into Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah. And you found that to be odious.
I think it... Well, come on, man. I mean, they're selling replicas of the nails?
Yeah, you didn't like that.
No, I didn't like that. I thought it was in bad taste, yeah.
You, Mr. Non-Religion.
It doesn't matter whether I'm non-religion. It's just from the standpoint of a man who was tortured to death. I think it's in bad taste.
Yeah, it's bad taste. Like maybe the time that you went on the air selling Princess Diana shot glasses after she died. Like that?
Wait a minute, David.
No, after she died, you went on the air hawking Princess Diana margarita mix and shot glasses.
I did that as a joke.
Oh, you did it as a... Well, if you did it as a joke, Maybe they're doing it as a joke.
No, those guys are doing it for real. They're selling the replicas of the nails.
Or maybe like the time, Phil, that you had Bobby Dooley doing a one-woman show called Princess Diana, My Heart Will Go On.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you remember that, huh? And she rises out of the fog with a steering wheel coming out of her chest. You remember that, don't you?
What I said about selling the replica of the nail...
Oh, yeah, what you said about that, huh? Or how about the time after the Cincinnati riots, you were selling a Franklin Mint piece showing a kid throwing a garbage can through a window? You remember that?
Your point is?
My point is, you just called the chairman of the FCC a hypocrite, thus once again putting me on the hot seat.
How does that put you on the hot seat? That's my own personal opinion.
Oh, come on, man. You know the heat's on. They're dusting off the hot seat for me. You're trying to make this tough? The heat's on all over the industry. You call a guy a hypocrite. Then you come out and talk about how they shouldn't be selling the replicas of the nails that were through Jesus' hands, but you got Bobby Dooley with a steering wheel in her chest. Talk about a hypocrite.
David,
what, are you gonna make sense now, Phil? Is that it? Are you gonna charm me? Are you gonna make sense right now?
Look, if it was in bad taste, then I apologize.
And then you said that if Jesus came back today, we'd crucify him all over again, didn't you?
I remember.
Didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Okay, that's it. I'm calling the FCC.
David, okay?
I'm calling the FCC. I might as well call him myself before I get the call. You know, I might as well just turn myself in.
What's the FCC gonna do to me, man? That's a piece of legitimate satirical material.
Oh, well, get you. Well, excuse me, Mr. Lenny Bruce, but I don't see it that way. I see it as you endangering me and every other radio executive coming out and calling the FCC chairman a hypocrite, saying the guy's got no integrity, and all of that other stuff, and then saying we'd nail Jesus up on the boards one more time for kicks.
I didn't say for kicks.
Well, you might as well have. Hey, Phil, did you ever hear the one about how Jesus walks into the inn and hands the innkeeper three nails? He says to the innkeeper, can you put me up for the night?
Yeah, it's the oldest joke in the world.
Well, why not tell it? You're laying out all the old ones. A steering wheel coming out of her chest. Yeah, you think about that. I'm getting on the phone now to Michael Powell. I'm going to try to apologize to the guy. Stuff an envelope full of a few bills.
Maybe he'll take the gratuity.
I hope so.
All right.
Once again, I got to bail you out. Once again, while you dump garbage pail after garbage pail on me, I'm bailing you out.
I'm sorry, and if it appears that I'm a hypocrite, then I do have to apologize.
And apologize to those people making the nails.
Oh, come on.
Apologize to them.
Why?
Because I just bought some.
I apologize to you people making the replica nails that go through Jesus' hands.
Giving them to my wife for her birthday.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
And a copy of the Best of Phil Hendry Show, The Death of Talk Radio, you can pick up a copy online at our website, www.philhendryshow.com, or by calling 1-877-616-7445. These are some of the best bits from 2003 and from our show, and the money that we raise from the sale of our CD goes to My Friend's Place. And that's the name of the place, My Friend's Place, a resource center for homeless and runaway kids in Hollywood, California. And all of the money goes to My Friend's Place. It's not one of these, a percentage of the proceeds or any of that jazz. All right? So what we're hoping to do, of course, this year, as we do every year, is raise a sizable amount of money for those guys, because they really do take care of these kids who have no place else to go. Call 1-877-616-7445, or you can buy the CD online at www.philhendryshow.com. Why are you standing there staring at me?
I wanted to ask you a question. You said if I had a thought, I could come in and join the program.
I didn't say you could just pop in. I said you could ask me when I'm off the air, man. Look at me having a deal, but it's on the air. What do you want?
You know, did you go to school to learn how to be a jackball, or does it just come natural?
This is my show, Dickman. My show. What do you want?
I want to know what happened to the lady last night on the Monster.
What?
What happened to the lady on the Oscars who was the monster?
What lady who was a monster?
The movie The Monster. The big bull dyke. Where was she?
The lady that was in the movie Monster?
Yeah.
She won the Oscar.
Who?
Charlize Theron. She was the lady.
No. No, no, she was not. She was not.
Listen, you idiot, I just told you...
Don't call me an idiot. The lady from Monster had a big fat butt, her nose was crooked, and her teeth were brown.
That was her!
No, it wasn't. The lady the last night had a nice-looking body.
That was the lady, man. They had her in makeup, bud. She played that lady from Monster in makeup.
What, did he put a rubber mask on her?
No, they didn't put a rubber mask on her, man. They put stuff on, you know, they made her up.
You mean they took her down to the Halloween shop?
No, they didn't take her to a Halloween shop. What do you mean? They don't do that in Hollywood, man. They put on plastic noses and fake eyes and stuff like that.
So, the girl on the TV last night that was all built like a brick house?
Yeah, that was her.
Sure, it couldn't have been. The lady on the Monster had a big ugly rubber face.
Dude, what I'm trying to tell you is that beautiful, gorgeous woman last night who won the Best Actress Award was actually that big, as you say, bull dyke with the big rear end and the crooked brown teeth. That was her.
And he didn't have a rubber mask.
No.
one Halloween, I put a Frankenstein mask on.
Good for you, man. Good for you. What's that got to do with anything?
Because you can scare people with it.
Well, good, man. Go out and get your Frankenstein mask and go scare people. I don't know what to tell you. The fact is that they had her in makeup. And that's what they do in Hollyweed, man. Dig it?
Oh, yeah, man. I'm down with it.
I'm going to kick your rear end down the hall, into that elevator, and down an elevator shaft for the grief you give me, man.
What a butt.
Hey, man, did they put her in a rubber mask?
You know, all you got to do is put in her brown teeth and win an Oscar.
Yeah, okay, I tell you what, man. Once you get cast in a movie, and you know what? You won't need any makeup.
You need me.
Yeah, well, you walked right into that one.
Jeez.
1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show here. She was in a rubber mask. So anyway, did you hear about Disney, man? They might kick that guy Eisner's rear end out of there. Now, it's not really a big piece of news for most of us, but in the business world, it is kind of fascinating to note that they finally got sick and tired of Disney. You know, Disney, the place that had Walt Disney running it, the guy that dropped acid to make Fantasia. Yeah, that Walt Disney. They're finally going to get back to, like, being creative again and being artists again and not necessarily towing to the bottom line, although, yeah, I get it. That's what business is all about. But the fact of the matter is, Uncle Walt, it is rumored, took acid before he made Fantasia. Of course, he was also very anti-Semitic, but let's not talk about that. I mean, you remember Fantasia? That flick is nuts. You know, they don't make movies like... Disney ain't making anything like that anymore. You gotta have some sort of connection to the astral realm to come up with something like that. No, what do they come up with now? They come with the predictable cartoons that they're noted for. They merchandise the hell out of everything. You walk into Disneyland or Disney World or the Disney... It's all about sell, sell, buy, buy, sell, buy, sell, buy. And all that cool stuff when we grew up, you know, and there was Uncle Walt there on the magical, wonderful, colorful, wild world of Disney. Remember the show on Sunday night? You know, and he had stuff about crocodiles, and then he'd show you how things were drawn, and he'd show you how they animated stuff by flipping the page back. That was cool looking. And he just looked like a guy who got a big charge out of life, you know? He just dug it. Now they got that guy Eisner, and you know, I'm not going to come down on Eisner. He's just a suit. He's just a salesman. That's all they had. They've had one succession of salespeople after another since Disney croaked. And they do all that lousy direct-to-video sequels to stuff that's already famous, and they just milk it and squeeze it until there isn't an ounce of breath left in the tiniest field mouse. They will suck the life out of the smallest little hamster. You know, risk is how life becomes an interesting and marvelous thing. You got to take a couple of risks in this world, baby. It isn't all about doing the safe thing, doing the bottom line thing. So here's what happened. And it didn't win, but you know that there was an animated film this year that was produced by Walt Disney and Salvador Dali. Now, I know a lot of you don't know who he is, but let me just tell you, Dali was nuts before there was such a thing as LSD. He was already tripping. Dali made movies where a guy's eyeball would be slit with a razor blade while the moon came up. Just nutty, kooky things. So Disney naturally saw in Dali a guy who was very interesting, and he made an animated movie with him. Well, it sat and it just sort of got dusty on the shelves there until Roy Disney, the nephew of Walt Disney, and Pixar, those guys brought it back to life. Well, guess what? It gets nominated for an Academy Award. And they were hoping it would win. It didn't win. But the theme, the moral of the story would have been, look, the art can sometimes win out and you can take a shot. Take a couple of shots in this world. What's happened over at Disney right now is they just don't like the direction of the company. I don't know if they're not making enough money or whatever, but Disney did a lot of things wrong. A, they got into the world of sports. B, they bought talk radio stations. Stupidest thing they ever could have done, because Disney is about as ready for the controversy that talk radio brings about as I am for a hairpiece. And I know I'm bald, but I ain't ready for one of those. Not yet. Not now. You know, when you're running a business, here's what I think. When you're running a business, sometimes, not all the time, sometimes take your eyeball off the books
And, you know, start reaching for the stars, baby, like Casey Kasem used to say. Take a couple of shots in this world. Remember why you're here. Remember why you started the business in the first place. Remember what gave you joy in the first place to do the things that you do. All of a sudden, everything is about, well, look at this. They make cartoons, and the cartoons make money, and they have theme parks. And if you go down to that California Adventure that they built down here in Anaheim that was an adjunct to Disneyland that was supposed to be this great thing, it is the cheapest. It is the most place most bereft of fun you've ever been in your life. They got a few cheesy rides. They got a couple of things that go up and down, a couple of places where you can get a blast of beer, and that's it. That's not what Walt freaking Disney was about. That guy was about, he was about Sleeping Beauty and junk like that. And that caterpillar that sat up on the mushroom and smoked that hookah. And that mouse with the sorcerer's hat and all those dancing brooms and stuff and those ballet pirouetting elephants. I mean, that's psycho stuff. That's Disney stuff, baby. All right. Now, I figure from that rant, I'll get myself a free family pass for at least 2 years. What do you think, Disney? Come on. Come on, baby. Come on, Eisner. Come on. Squeeze one out for me, baby. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show. Not a chance.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
And now more on The Phil Hendry Show.
Time for The Phil Hendry Show mailbag as we return from our vacation in Mexico. Yes, Mexico, the land down under. Bring the family to Cabo San Lucas. Ride jet skis noisily as people try to get sleep on the beach. Run around and carouse like loud, drunken, loutish Americans while people are trying to have a nice, quiet, romantic dinner. Yes, Mexico. Anyway, hi, Phil. I and my boyfriend enjoy the show very much. My boyfriend and I are both podiatry residents on opposite ends of the 10 freeway. He works at the VA in Los Angeles, and I in Loma Linda. He often fights the traffic on his way to visit me during the week while listening to the Phil Hendry Show. Then he gets up at 4 a.m. to return to Los Angeles. It would be nice if there was a podiatry foot and ankle surgeon character. We often don't hear anything about podiatrists in the media. When we do, it's very funny. Thanks, Dragon Claw. Mr. Hendry, I'm listening to your show and disagree with your statement regarding the proposed amendment to the Constitution banning gay marriages. While I agree with your sentiment, it would not be the first time the Constitution has been sullied by a stupid amendment. I'm referring to the 18th Amendment prohibiting the manufacture, sale, or transportation of intoxicating liquors for beverage purposes. Like I said, I agree with your sentiment, but it wouldn't be the first time such stupidity is won out. And look at what evil that amendment spawned. Yours, Jim Durkee. Well, no, man. What I mean about the gay amendment thing, it would be depriving a certain segment of society a right that everybody else had, you know? Like, the 18th Amendment would be like if they had passed it saying only Irishmen can't drink and everybody else can. That would have been devastating. But as it was, the 18th Amendment was a pretty good idea because it dried out a lot of Mexicans. I'm kidding. I'm joking. Come on. I'm 14 years old, and I'm from Youngstown, Ohio. I love your show, but I haven't heard from R.C. Collins lately. Can you please bring him back, or is he still at military camp? From Kylie Fithian. Hey, Phil, all these technical terms you use, table read and phoner, kind of strange, don't you think? Phoner sounds rather erotic. Are these Hollywood terms or what? I've heard the expressions give me a ring or a jingle, also the ever basic call me, but a phoner? Do you like make this stuff up, or am I dated? Thanks, Cindy. All righty.
Hi, Phil. I love your show and attempt to listen as often as possible. Laughter is good medicine. I'm a single male doing my best to meet single women online. I've posted a photograph online with Match.com, but all the women want to meet the man on the right side of the picture. When the women discover I'm the man on the left, they discontinue our dialogue. What shall I do, loyal listener Ed? Dear Phil, I was curious as to how many episodes of Futurama that you did. I think it's 3, but a jackass friend of mine guarantees me it's 2. Brian and St. Pete. P.S. Have an orange bang and bubble up on me. Thank you. I did 3, I think, but it might have been 2. Your show is the best. Give a shout out to Southern Connecticut State University. Anthony. Dear Phil, I have a few questions for you. Why is it that a guy on the radio who does funny voices is the only person in the U.S. giving a spirited, reasoned explanation of why this country had to be involved in Afghanistan, Iraq, and any other crap hole that decides to cause big trouble in the world? I saw the wall of female listeners, and I would love to meet one of the ladies on that wall. Any chance you could set me up with her? Your longtime listener, Brad in Lake Forest. Yeah, sure. Hi, Phil. I'm a nightly listener of your show, and I have to say that it's kept me entertained since I started listening. My favorite part of your show ever would have to be the episode where the lady was an old dancer, and she was explaining how she moved like a tiger to Robert Palmer's Addicted to Love. I nearly died. Great show. Keep it up. P.S. Love your movie recommendations. Kenan in Tacoma, Washington. That's our mailbag on The Phil Hendry Show. As you know, I read them, but I don't necessarily answer them. Now then, I'm sorry, where? Line 2? Yeah. Margaret?
Yes, Phil, how are you?
Good.
Well, I thought I would call in to defend myself because I didn't hear you doing it. And
about what?
The last letter you read about the, quote, old lady moving like a tiger. I thought it was inflammatory. I found it to be serendipitous, yes, but inflammatory nonetheless. It inflamed portions that, frankly, I haven't washed in a long time. And I think...
Why are you insulted?
I was referred to as some old lady getting out of the dance floor, as if I don't belong on a dance floor.
All right, he was referring to a show that you did where you said, that you danced provocatively with men, right?
Yes, I danced erotically with other men, yes. Yes. Because that's me. That's how I express myself.
Well, you said in that show... now that I think about it, Margaret...
Oh, you find the old lady funny, too? You know, I find it amusing that you people that can't dance...
Now, wait a minute. You said you got down on all fours and crawled across the dance floor like a tiger. Okay?
Yes, and that I growled. But what's unusual about that?
What's unusual about it? First of all, you're doing it to another woman's husband. And then you're, like, wrapping your leg around him like the guy's a barber pole in a strip joint.
And? Your point's what?
My point? Come on, Margaret.
That an old lady can't...
It's not that you're an old lady, that it's inappropriate behavior for anybody.
Oh, my living sweet Lord. Inappropriate behavior. That I'm free with my body, and that I move to the music in a very non-linear way, that I emote... rather than I'm self-conscious about my dancing. Yes, I dance, Phil. I do the running man. I do the cabbage patch. The robot.
Yeah, man. I bet you look hot out there doing that.
And the reason why you don't dig any of it is because you can't do it. Because you're too tight. Because you've got a rear-end brace on that doesn't allow... Oh, God. You're so lame.
Oh, here we go. You're not an old lady, though, are you?
No, I'm not. I'm very youthful.
Kill the music, man. What are you doing?
I'm hanging up.
Well, then why don't you do it?
I'm doing it.
How long should it take a young, youthful, free-spirited dancing woman like you to hang up a phone?
I'm getting to the... There.
There what?
I hung it up.
No, you didn't hang it up.
Why not?
Because you're still talking to me, aren't you?
You know, it's amazing how much mileage you get out of this bit, too. You know?
All right, so it's a few years old.
Are you killing enough time?
Yeah, about another minute to the break. Hang it up, will ya? Am I killing enough time? You know what? If it means killing this show, I don't need to kill any time. Free-spirited. I was at a dance the other night. Not a dance. I was in a club dancing with my wife the other night in Mexico at the Tropicana Inn. Now, here's a place you got to go. This is in San... It's in Cabo de San Jose. They give you that Pacific lobster, 2 pounds. 2 pounds of it. Okay? And then you get, you know, all the beer you can drink and all that stuff. Then they got a band out that's, you know, just fantastic when they finally got to the music, right? So go out to the bar area. Now, let me tell you two of the great joys of Mexico. I just want to mention this to you. One of them, in my opinion, is listening to the music. I don't want to hear, and let me just make this recommendation to anybody who owns a bar or a restaurant in Mexico. I don't go down there, man, to hear Tie a Yellow Ribbon Round the Old Oak Tree. I go down there to hear some of that Latin stuff. And the band was great. And they had a lead singer. She was gorgeous, man, in a tight black dress with little black short hair. And, you know, her boyfriend who looked like he, you know, was in the Mexican mafia. But that's okay. And it was great. And when we finally said to her, the whole crowd in the bar said, just play some Latin music. And what?
I happen to dance to Latin music.
Will you shut up? So just play some Latin music, you know? So, like, we were having a blast. The second thing that's really good, though, this is the best thing. Nothing beats the experience of sitting in any bar or restaurant in Mexico, and to your left, as was to my left, two tight, scrubbed, yuppie couples from America, right? And they're in their shorts and their topsiders, and they're grinning, and they're drinking their wine, and I go to the guy and I say, give me a Romeo and Juliet, man, okay? That $20 job, one of them big fat suckers from Cuba. Right away, senor. Right. The cat brings over that thing, clip off the tip of that, light that baby up, and just puff huge plumes of cigar smoke. And you can see the yuppies staring at you with that grimace, and there ain't nothing they can do about it. Ain't nothing they can do about it. You can see them. They had that American instinct of, excuse me, could you put it up? And they realize they're not in America anymore. They're in another country. And if they bother me, I can have the guy throw them out. But they don't want to get thrown out because it's so much fun to be in the joint. And you ain't going to find a non-smoking bar in Mexico. And if you do, I guarantee it's going to be one boring place. Not only was I smoking one, but Maria finally said, you know what, that looks pretty good. She bought herself a Cohiba. And we're sitting there just blasting away a nose. Another round of margaritas there, garçon. And it was a beautiful, beautiful thing. So that's just another little plug over there for Mexico. Now,
did you dance?
Yeah, I did the cabbage patch.
What a liar.
Our email address, phs@philhenryshow.com.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Henry Show is back.
Now, sports news. Kobe Bryant. Boy, there's more news about that guy. Some other woman said he tried to kiss her that night. That's right. Now, we don't know whether this is true or not, but some woman said that she came to his room to deliver hors d'oeuvres or, you know, the calamari or whatever it was that he ordered room service. You know, the usual garbage you get from room service. And he reached across or leaned across or grabbed the back of her head or something and tried to kiss her. And she said, no, I have a boyfriend and you have a wife. How about that, guys, huh? How about that? You and I try that and she'll scream and call the cops immediately. But Kobe Bryant does it and she, well, you know, it would be interesting, but you have a wife and I have a boyfriend. Like she considers it because he's some big, tall freak of nature that plays basketball. Do you love it? You know, I got this to say about that. I hope the L.A. Lakers leave town. I really do. knowing how much joy everybody gets out of their basketball team. I was a Laker fan down through the years. You don't need to tell me about the Lakers, man. I lived and died with them. I'm so sick of hearing about them, looking at them, reading about their players, reading about the problems they got, reading about Shaq, reading about Kobe, reading about Jackson and what a genius he is. Yeah, he's a real stone genius. As long as he's got Shaq and Kobe in the lineup. Other than that, that team stinks on high. God, I can't wait for the season to end, because when the season ends, that means football camp is about a month away. I don't care if the Lakers live or die. And now we find out that that clown Jackson couldn't coach his way out of a wet paper sack. The sooner the season's over, the better, as far as I'm concerned. I'm not kidding you. I get so tired of it. You know, I grew up in this town, born and raised. If anybody's got a right to start bagging these teams, I do. I put enough money into them. The Dodgers, you guys too. You better come up with something real special this year for me to even be remotely interested in you, or I'm going to be here every step of the way hounding and crying and complaining and bellyaching and moaning and just blackening each and every day that you're here. Every time somebody gets a smile on their face because of the Dodgers, I'll be standing at the ready with a frying pan. And the same goes for the Lakers. You know what I'm into? Avengers football. Yeah! That's right, yeah. Go ahead, laugh at me. Hey, let me tell you what. Sitting and watching indoor football isn't any sillier than watching basketball. I'd much rather watch indoor football than those clowns running up and down the court in gym shorts throwing the ball up into the net. At least I'm looking at some, you know, the potential for some real violence. The potential for some real injury. So I got my Avengers tickets. They got a great ball club. Haven't been to a game yet this year, guys. I'm sorry. I was out of town. But we're going to a whole lot of games. You know what's cool about the indoor the arena football? Seriously? If you catch the ball, you get to keep it. You get to keep the football. That's why my kids, when they go, I got great seats. Like, they're right on the, well, in normal football terms, they'd be on the 50. But I think mine are on the 25. Something like that. I love my kids don't want to sit there. They want to go and sit under the goalpost because when the field goal guy kicks it, you can keep the ball if it falls in the stands. My son, my eldest son's got like 3 arena footballs. And I'm like, I want one. No, you don't get it. They're mine. Oh, come on. I want one. No. I gave you the tickets, didn't I? Yeah, quit crying, okay? You're my stepdad. It's potential child abuse. I'd much rather go out and watch that than basketball. I have had it with the NBA, honest to goodness. I can't abide them any more than I can abide. At least the NFL puts an entertaining product out on the field. The NBA, with every crook, criminal, and now we got this slob, Jason Williams, and the latest news is that maybe he planted the fingerprints on that shotgun, that he blew away this chauffeur and then tried to get the chauffeur's fingerprints on the shotgun. This Williams kid is an example of what I've been talking about. They come out of high school and college. They have no practical experience or practical life experience with regard to anything. And they're only useful to the NBA insofar as they can play basketball. Once they can't, they're thrown out into the street like yesterday's trash. They come out of the schools and the high schools and colleges without any real life experience. These guys wouldn't even know how to open up a bill. They wouldn't know how to open up an envelope that had the Irish sweepstakes winning ticket in it. All they know how to do is take check, give check to agent, agent cash check, give you allowance, right? Good. Pat you on the head, give you your multi-million dollar house. Don't you guys understand you're being made fools of? Don't, especially African-American young men. It's really sad it takes a white guy to tell you this, but I'm going to tell it to you straight. You guys are being made chumps out of. You guys are being told that the NBA and the NFL and Major League Baseball and all this stuff, I say hockey, but they, you know, they keep you guys out of that game. But that's another story. I know they've got 2 players in the Buffalo Sabres or something. You're told that that's your lot in life. That's success. Yes, look at all your heroes. They dribble basketballs. They throw footballs. Never mind going into medicine. Never mind going into the sciences. Never mind being something with your life other than just a big, tall geek. You can be a basketball player, and you guys buy it. And the black community sells it to you, your parents and your teachers. You want a hero? You want a guy that's going to tell you the truth? You want someone you can follow? How about me? Phil Hendry, the young African-American man's friend. That's it for another show, ladies and gentlemen. Our show is produced, as always, by Janice and Garrow. Chris Pelton was vomiting in the corner this evening. Mark Newman, an expectant father, is our engineer. I'm Phil Hendry.
But
not for much longer. Don't forget, we are at the Aspen Comedy Festival. We're going to be performing two shows at the Aspen Comedy Festival, and they will be broadcast live, too. So if you guys can't make it to Aspen, just tune in the radio Thursday and Friday night or afternoon or whenever you hear the show. And we're going to be on there for a couple of hours doing our show in front of all the heavies there, all the entertainment heavies in Aspen. It's the Phil Henry Show.
1-800-449-8686.